And we're heading into a song which is called Sputnik. And it's from 1961 in Mexico. It's by the Loudjets. And as I said, it's called Sputnik, which was the first satellite that was launched in 1957. And this is a cover in Spanish of Jerry Engler's 1961 song, Sputnik. And this was released in 2003.
Cuando al espacio fue lanzado el Sputnik número uno, no me pude contener y compuse un rock and roll con un ritmo muy movido y este se llamó el Sputnik. Sput, sput, sputinigity. Sput, sput, sputinigity. Sput, sput, sputinigity. Sput, sput, sputinigity. Volando alrededor del mundo a una gran velocidad. ¡Yeah, go! Invento de la ciencia fue la expectación mundial. Eso fue el Sputnik, de tamaño muy pequeño, que en el rock and roll fue un ritmo muy movido. Sky, 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 la la, y sky, 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 la la, y sky, 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 la la, y sky, 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 la la. Volando alrededor del mundo a una gran velocidad. ¡Yeah, go!
Off into the distance there. That is, or was, the Loudjets. And in Spanish, the song Sputnik, which was originally done by Jerry Engler in 1961. Now, why did we play that? Because we're going to be talking about the Kármán Project. Now, the Kármán line is an arbitrary one, a line like the International Dateline. The dateline divides today from yesterday. So if you're in New Zealand, or today from tomorrow, if you are in Tonga. Its positioning is quite arbitrary, as evidenced by the zigzag through the Bering Strait or its deviation around New Zealand. Likewise, the Kármán line is in one sense arbitrary. It marks the altitude above the Earth at which outer space begins. Actually, the Kármán line is not quite as arbitrary as the date line. Above the Kármán line, an object at orbital velocity can complete one or two circles around the Earth before atmospheric friction slows it and causes it to re-enter. Below that line, friction is so great that you don't even complete one orbit. That Kármán line is at an altitude of, wait for it, 100 kilometres. Not that the atmosphere stops at that altitude. It just gets thinner and thinner as you go higher, which means that satellites can stay up for days, weeks, months, years, decades, even centuries, depending on their altitude. When Helene Hubey wanted to form an organization aimed to foster dialogue between people in the space industry, she chose to name the Karman Project. That's what the name she chose. She realized that people from different geopolitical areas were not usually communicating between each other. The Karman Project is a platform that serves as a United Nations for space. She gathered together some of the space industry's key figures, engaged others from beyond the sector. The result has been a video and audio documentary called The Space That Makes Us Human. It aims to bridge science and the arts, global leaders and the greater public. The documentary takes a journey through four chapters, each exploring an element of the deep relationship between space and humanity. On this evening's The Space Show, we are going to listen to excerpts from the documentary as well as outtakes from the original interviews that informed the documentary. Now, here is the teaser for the documentary. It's called The Sense That Makes Us Human. Let's take a listen.
Okay, so we talked about putting a phone in space. What does that actually mean?
The moment you selected as an astronaut, you have a list of things that can go wrong. Everything is against you. It's extremely difficult to go to space.
The heroes you see on the movies, these were my bosses when I was in Houston. And they used to say that they were ordinary people doing extraordinary things.
Not every day you can say that, or you can brag in a sense that I created a national space agency for our country.
For thousands of years, Indigenous Australians made sense of the land by looking to the sky. The dreaming is what they call the time when life was created according to their culture.
So right now, my attention more focused on how to build affordable satellites to help the people living on Earth.
It's a roller coaster ride, honestly, selling things that don't exist.
Wants to build trust, but in space.
People coming from art, from music, from science, from technology, politics, and bring them all together.
So you speak as someone who first and foremost want to change space.
To start and develop what I said, the one future, the one common future.
Well, that was the introduction to our program tonight. So what next for humanity? Well, episode one of this documentary is spoken by Shelley Pellegrin. To answer this, we start at the beginning of existence. We have the shared human sensation of gazing at the sky and looking ourselves in a dream, or losing ourselves in a dream.
In the beginning, there was chaos, the immaterial, the unknown, a gaping void of darkness. And then, bang! of evolution, the soul of ancient myths, the emergence of religion, philosophy, science. Humanity has always come back to the same question. Why do we exist? In the sky, searching for something more. Dreaming. Humans, made of the same fabric. Chasing the most ambitious answers. Aiming for the stars, until we reach them together. Our own limits. Limits of knowledge, of space, of time. We continue to explore, failing along the way, and growing as one.
That was the introduction. Now we're going to hear from Catherine Bennell, Pig. She's from the Australian Space Agency, and she looks to Aboriginal sky lore for inspiration.
For thousands of years, Indigenous Australians made sense of the land by looking to the sky. The dreaming is what they call the time when life was created according to their culture. And there's a strong link between space and Australia's Indigenous people, who are essentially, you know, the world's oldest astronomers. And for thousands of years, the sky was for them how they made sense of the world, but also how they made sense of day-to-day life. It dictated seasonal activities around food and movement. It was a reflection of what's happening on the land. They had constellations that let them know the best time to look for emu eggs, for example. And today, you know, we continue to look from Earth to space, but we now can also look from space to Earth. And I think that really affects how we dream day to day, that perspective of looking both up but looking both down, the intersection of space explorer and Earth explorer, and how we can really believe that we can make those dreams real.
Helene Hubie is co-founder and chair of the Karman Project. She looks forward to humans being on Mars, but is aware there are many problems to solve first.
We are currently expanding the boundaries of our life habitats. So we are exploring the universe, and we want to settle in the moon first and then in Mars. And this is, I think, just part of who we are as humans. We've already pushed the boundaries of explorations, and it's just like music or like art or like spirituality or whatever. It's just part as who we are as humans. So I'm convinced we'll go to Mars, and probably farther in the coming future. And so in this journey, Moon is the first step of that journey. It's a step where you can learn a lot, because to settle on Mars, there are many questions, Mark. How are you going to produce electricity, for example? How are you going to ensure communication, for example, et cetera, et cetera. There is also the question of sustainability. And because if you go there, it takes you 6 months to go there. So you better have thought through a plan which is a minimum sustainable. Because, of course, you'll not be able to carry if you everything you need. And then if you want to go back, it will take another minimum 6 months, right? So it's much better to have a playground, which is a few days far from the Earth, and where you can already kind of mimic what life could be on Mars and where you can solve very important challenges, as I was saying, like, you know, energy, for example, in a place which is not too far from the Earth. So, and then something which is especially interesting in the Moon is that you have tons of water ice, so water. And with water, of course, you can produce propellant because the spacecraft, they use liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen, or they use liquid methane. So the Moon is a great refueling station, if I may say so, to explore the universe further. The Moon is really here the first step to learn how to live in a sustainable manner before we go to Mars.
Now, Thomas Pesquet is a Frenchman who has twice represented the European Space Agency aboard the International Space Station. He discusses why it is extremely difficult to go to space.
The moment you're selected as an astronaut, you pretty much have in the back of your head, whether you're aware of it or now, you have a list of things that can go wrong. Because if you look at it, like everything, the probabilities are against you. Everything is against you because it's extremely difficult to go to space. So really, you need a series of small miracles to end up in space. So there's this, and then, you know, the station needs to be still working properly, so nobody should break anything. The station shouldn't be in a bad shape. You know, the countries still need to cooperate, because otherwise the ISS project is over. Your health, your everything. So you constantly build a list of things that could go wrong, but also because it's your job. Because I think a job of an astronaut is mostly to adapt to a situation, and if something goes wrong, to fix it.
William Gerstenmaier is Vice President of Mission Assurance at SpaceX. He was asked about what his reaction was when SpaceX launched Elon Musk's Tesla car into deep space. Here's what he said.
So if you wanted to create a vision of what it's like to be a multi-planetary species, that's the vision. You get in your car and you drive to space. So it's a simple metaphor that can be picked up by humans on the Earth and normal people, and it doesn't resonate with the scientists. But I think it's fun to get a chance to step back and see both sides of the argument, to see the scientists be grumpy about, well, wait a minute, this isn't the way we've always done it. But then to see other normal citizens get excited because they can now see how space becomes something they can use.
The Space That Makes Us Human features 15 interviews with interdisciplinary leaders. We will hear some of these interviews in full on future space shows right here on Southern FM. The second part of the documentary, The Space That Makes Us Human, is titled Cosmic Links. It represents the connection between space and Earth, made possible by satellite technology. Karen Hertzschi is a board member of Yun's Social Business. She says that global internet connectivity can only come from space. This connectivity is essential, even in remote and regional areas.
If you think about industrialized countries, we know that connectivity, you basically put fibers in the ground. That's how you get your connectivity, your internet and everything. But if you think Amazon, or you think about, you know, basically patches in Africa, which are really, really remote, if you want to get connectivity there, it really can only come from satellites. It has to come from space. But how important is it for rural areas to really be connected? I think the last 12 months have totally shown this. If you think about this COVID pandemic where people are sitting at home, the ones who do not have access to information, to education, to remote healthcare, they are lost. I mean, they're just stuck. And that's really how important it is, and how social impact can really be achieved by just improving this level of connectivity and then really making good use of it.
Chris Bosshausen is a co-founder of Planet, a company that has deployed hundreds of Earth imaging satellites into low Earth orbit. He points out that today, individuals have more computing power than did entire nations in the late 1950s.
All of us have in our pocket more space capability than the USSR had when they launched Sputnik. And you can do that. In fact, if you ask your mom to mortgage the house, you can run your own space program as big as the USSR in 1957. And I love that little fact because it blows people's minds that they're literally walking around with an entire, you know, space agency's worth of technology in their pocket. I think it was that moment where the girl was like, oh, well, I didn't know I could do that. And I think that's the key thing for me is a lot of people don't know actually how accessible space is these days, and they're actually allowed to do it. It's not up to governments anymore. You can do it if you want. Putting a phone in space is a really great place to start.
Chris Boshausen, who since making that comment has actually travelled momentarily into space. By momentarily, I mean he did a 10-minute suborbital flight. You're listening to The Space Show.
Serving Bayside Melbourne for 35 years, this is 88.3 Southern FM.
Where you're listening to The Space Show with Andrew Rennie. We're looking at the Karman Project and some of the outcomes from that. And we're going to hear now from Jonathan Hofeller, who is Vice President of SpaceX's Starlink project, being in charge of commercial sales. Now, Starlink satellites are launched in batches of 60 or more, and Hofeller sees their movement across the sky as being like a geometric dance of perfection.
Once I got told that if you kick a ball strong enough, it will eventually keep orbiting around the planet. I closed my eyes and imagined thousands of them moving around me. And I got lost.
To me, it feels like when you're watching those satellites fly across the sky, and even when they're in orbit, it's in my mind, it's this peaceful dance, right?
There's a moment of pure absence when you close your eyes, right before you start seeing something through your eyelids. At the beginning, you feel lonely. I start thinking that I'm a drop of blood in the ocean, wondering, or that the earth is burning and I see it through a window. It doesn't feel right. I imagine being naked. I often dream about floating in space, thinking about what people can see from up there. The story says that there are thousands of dots harmoniously moving around the blue planet. I imagine them being able to receive something from us, reflecting it back to others. And I feel safe, kind of.
Somewhat prevented from being able to prosper and educate and just communicate. And we've seen this in a number of cases. Some of the schools that we've connected, some of the indigenous tribes that we've connected, just an immense number of applications that require connectivity across the globe. You know, there's community centers, children's centers, women's shelters. It's just a number of applications that it's been very heartwarming to see that effect on people.
The final chapter of the documentary, The Space That Makes Us Human, showcases our shared responsibility for our future in space that can only be achieved through transparent and responsible collaboration. The Karman Project was inspired by the more than 300 scientists behind the Event Horizon Telescope. They captured the first ever image of a black hole. In 2019, the Event Horizon Telescope project obtained the first image of a supermassive black hole. Sarah Markoff of the University of Amsterdam was a member of the Event Horizon team.
The heavy elements in our blood, everything that we need to be alive on Earth, had to come from the explosions of stars and the formation of black holes, right? I've worked modeling this black hole since I was a student, so I feel, you know, very attached to it. I dream about science. I dream about math sometimes. I try to imagine, you know, what it would be like if I could somehow fly there. How would it really look? We're part of the universe that created these things. We have the consciousness to understand them. We get to the point where we can start to explore distant objects and try to understand this weird multi-dimensional space that we live in. This space-time is almost like a fabric, and so this fabric you can think of is falling into the hole at the same speed of light. So light itself is like a fish trying to swim upstream, it can't get out. It's a personal thing to be able to understand them as well, I think. And it's also the fact that we're related to them. We're connected. When I realized that I was one of the first group of humans ever to see a black hole, right? Because we were this limited team of like hundreds of people. It's not often in life that you feel unique.
Yes, just give you a moment to contemplate that thought. Now, the European Space Agency is a shining example of international cooperation. Jean-Jacques Dordain was a former Director General of the European Space Agency. He foresees a change from the days that space activity was done exclusively by government agencies.
I think that the future of humankind on planet Earth does not depend on one or two or three. It depends on 7 billion of people. And this is the reason why I think that all this movement, which is called New Space, with the arrival of new actors and especially private actors, is very important. Because during several decades, space was mostly a top-down activity ruled and financed by governments, which was okay because we have developed all the technologies during that time. But now it's time to have another movement, which is much more a bottom-up movement with more and more people considering space as an important part of the future of humans on planet Earth. And that this is very good news, because this is by combining the top-down approach and the bottom-up approach that we have a chance. It will take time, but we have a chance to make all humans becoming actors, actors of their future. And maybe not their future, but at least the future of the following generations.
Prajeep Basu is co-founder and chief executive officer of Sature. He sees space activity as a driver for international collaboration.
No one imagined that Russia and or former USSR and the US would ever collaborate. And bam, you had the International Space Station, right? So I believe space brings people together because it reminds that there is only one Earth, and it creates a platform for such effective global collaboration, because the motive of people coming together working in space is much higher than the geopolitics on Earth. It goes around the continuity of humanity, sheer existence of humanity itself is such a puzzle that people, you know, when they come together, they are more of explorers trying to identify the next biggest problems rather than get involved in the pettiness of humankind.
William Gerstenmaier was for many years Associate Administrator of NASA and is, as I said, now Vice President of Mission Assurance at SpaceX. He was asked about his reaction when he first saw pictures of the Earth from space.
When you see the little blue planet of the Earth, and then you can see that really thin blue atmosphere, and that's the atmosphere that we all live in. And I think that really started the whole environmental movement, because I think it became obvious to all of us on the Earth that, hey, this is a closed system, and moving out into space changes our perspective and makes us realize that we're really a pretty small planet and we really need to take care of the planet. I think one of the Apollo astronauts said, you know, we went all the way to the moon to learn more about the Earth. And I think that's really true. I think even as you travel and explore, it gives you a different perspective that makes you makes you realize how important it is to take care of the things that you have. So it's not.
William Gerstenmaier bringing to a close our section on the Kármán Project.